What's up, y'all? Peck here from CHGO Bulls. Our friends at Sunnyside Cannabis Dispensary are here to elevate your summer. Sunnyside is your home for judgment-free cannabis shopping. They've got a crazy selection with over 100 different strains to choose from with easy online ordering and in-store pickup. Stop in the store nearest you throughout Illinois for expert guidance from their staff. Head to sunnyside.shop and use code HICHGO at checkout for 35% off your favorite brands like Cresco, Good News, and Floracal to elevate your first purchase. Sunnyside Cannabis Dispensary, bright buys every day, only for 21 and over or Illinois med card holders.
It's done.
Connor McDavid, it's not real.
The goal of the year,
Panarin!
Part of the past, the celebrations forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights.
History. Win. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome back to CHGO Bears After Dark, presented by Circa Sports. We're back. Little late to the party here this week for After Dark. Had to watch my Purdue Boilermakers fall in the national championship, but now it's eyes on the NFL draft 14 days away. I'm Greg Braggs. Alongside me, as always, is our guy, Mark Carman. And joining the show for the first time here for CHGO Bears is editor-in-chief of Da Bears Blog, formerly of Windy City Gridiron. That is the great Robert Schmitz. How we doing, Robert?
I'm doing well, man. I mean, we're a couple days away from the draft. It's like the lead-in before Christmas on Bear With Us, the podcast I do. I compared it at one point to Carm, are you married?
No, but I have been, and I like women.
Well, great. You remember that like 3 weeks before you made the big commitment where Everybody still expected you to live out a normal work week because you didn't have any time off yet, right? But you got it like sitting on the brain. That's how I feel leading up to pick number one, obviously pick number nine too, where it's like, it's real. It's right about to happen. So, but we can't be that, or we can't be uncool about it yet. You know what I mean?
Yes, that's true. I mean, I guess you want to maintain calm, but I don't know. I watch your videos, man. You're breaking down. You're telling people the speed of which the frames of the Robert Schmitz video thing is going, and you're clocking out that he's looking at one receiver and he's throwing to another, and he's making a decision in, I don't know, what'd you say, a half of a second.
It is.
And so look, so they're drafting Caleb Williams, Robert. I'm not gonna get nervous about this. This is what's happening. It's a done deal. And
good.
Look, I'm leaning into. There's a guy by the name of Andrew Luck, 4,300 plus yards his rookie year. Why can't he top it? Let's just go all the way. And it's not, you know, it's 17 game season now, so. It's less than 300 a game. It's 273 a game. Why not? I think it's possible.
It's the immovable object and the unstoppable force, right, Carm? Where the immovable object here is never bet on a rookie quarterback. The unstoppable force is, well, what about if that rookie quarterback has DJ Moore and also Keenan Allen and also a potential extra toy at number nine overall and a good defense and a running back that he can check it down to and a tight end that just caught for 700 yards last year. And, you know, potentially another young receiver of any sort. Like, you start stacking up what the Bears have for Caleb Williams. Man, why couldn't he be productive? I've had the same question on, like, where do you land on what to expect from this guy if the Bears draft him? Because it should be something. I mean, the team is too good for them not to win some games, right, Carm?
Well, I guess the question then is, Robert, because you asked, how can it not work out? And we're naming all the personnel. And this is, I think, something we've all done as Bears fans, just constantly focusing on the personnel. We always seem to trust the hires when the Bears make them. And I guess that the unanswered question is, how will Shane Waldron and this offense, you know, develop the quarterback and develop this offense with a rookie quarterback? you know, it's two different tasks that are, you know, to and they're not easy here in Chicago. They very rarely work out, if ever, you know, and even Mark Trestman, who brought maybe the best offense me and you have ever seen in our lifetime here, that flamed out fairly quickly. So that's, I mean, we can get into Caleb Williams here in a minute, because I have a few different questions I have to you for Caleb. But when you ask, you know, how can this go wrong? You know, what is your confidence level that Shane Waldron will make sure this goes right?
So after watching how Shane handled Geno Smith, I do feel pretty good. Like, I'll give you a teaser on Caleb. So we just got out of the NCAA tournament. I'm sure everybody saw this. Carm, did you watch any of the tournament?
I did.
I know. Greg did. Guys have probably seen that freshman, or sometimes it's a sophomore, that decides he's going to take the last shot, and he takes the worst shot on the planet because the defense realized that he was going to take it. And so they boxed him into something that was low percentage. The guy puts it up anyways. Team ends up losing, right? If Caleb has something that I want to see Shane work around, it's that Caleb will attempt the throw if the throw is there. Even if his throwing base isn't set because he's got pressure around his ankles, even if he's got to just whip it with all arm and no lower body, he has the juice to try to hit a 25-yard corner route. He's just going to spray the ball a little if he throws it without any semblance of form. Right? The fact that he can get it there at all is impressive. The fact that he lands it sometimes is part of why he gets spoken about as well as he does. But I would love to see Shane Waldron channel Caleb Williams and get him into higher percentage throws more often, so that he doesn't have to take the lower percentage thing as often as possible, right? You don't have to always be biting at that really hard to reach apple. Instead, sometimes take the low-hanging fruit. And the good news is we saw Shane just do that with Geno, where he got Geno throwing to the flat. He got Geno hitting the quick slant. He got Geno hitting the quick dig, setting up bigger shots downfield through an offense that sometimes felt like jazz, right? Where you got a basic idea of a play concept that resolves itself after about 2 seconds. And after that, it's as if Shane said, and then if it doesn't work, just go do what you do. And Geno did. He'd move around in the pocket. He'd throw across his body. He'd throw with all arm, and he'd make things work alongside Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf. Honestly, it's really fun film to watch. Like, the Seahawks tape at its best is really good stuff. And moreover, he got Geno playing, Mark, and also Greg, within an identity. And I think if you could get Caleb trying to win a certain way, like, this is how I'm going to win, this is my checklist, you can really get the most out of him, even early.
Go ahead, Greggy, because I'm just sitting here, you know, look. I mean, that's probably the reason why he is here, or why he was coveted in Shane, what he did with Geno, taking a guy who had never come close to the numbers that he hit under Shane Waldron. And the Bears were looking for somebody who could do things with not just, you know, wouldn't coach you in just one way, but in multiple ways.
Right.
And so, you know, he checked that box. To me, it's more of a question of how quickly do they let the reins off of him. You know, they are going to be able to run the football. The only my concern is not Shane. My concern is, are the Bears going to hold up front? Is Ryan Bates actually, does Ryan Poles have that right that he can step in and be a starting center? Is Tevin going to stay healthy? Is Nate Davis going to be better? Can Braxton take a step forward? Even Darnell Wright, I mean, everybody will praise him, but there's still, you know, room for growth there too. So if he has time and he's protected, the guy's going to be successful. I don't have much doubt on that.
I agree with you. I mean, especially just given the way that Caleb will move around in the pocket, he, especially on his 2023 film, where the offensive line really started to fall apart, if you had pressure from the interior, if you got pressure around the edge, Caleb was pretty good about avoiding the first rusher. But like you're saying, Carm, he would milk that pocket clock for all it was worth. Sometimes being willing to stand in the pocket like 7, 8, 9 seconds before throwing the ball. The willingness to do it is, in and of itself, an impressive display of awareness, but you can't do that forever behind Ryan Bates or Coleman Shelton, or especially the way Nate Davis played last year. Yep. Hopefully we get a rebound season from Davis in particular. I don't know about you guys, but he was one that really disappointed me. Braxton, I like to think we know who he is. Hopefully he takes another step forward, but we've got a serviceable left tackle at a fifth round price. Then on the other side, Darnell Wright should take a nice step forward as a sophomore. Then Tevin Jenkins is the leader of the line when he's healthy. But that center spot and that right guard spot, man, I wouldn't blame Ryan Poles if he looked to add somebody in the draft that could push those two over the course of this season, just because you have to get this right, don't you? In 2024, yep. You can't afford to get this wrong.
Yeah, no question about it. Robert Schmitz from the Bears blog, editor in chief, has done a lot of great work, you know, in Bears Twitterlandia and Bears podcasting for a while now. I actually crossed paths with Robert at Bears training camp in Bourbonnais all those years ago in 2018. Yeah. It seems like a good group of us have seemed to find our way here in this Bears media game. You do such a great job, Robert. And one of the things that stood out to me, and the reason I wanted to bring you on, is something you said really sparked, you know, as I was chasing Purdue dreams, but you triggered something with me that has been something I've been trying to say to people, where everyone seems to we constantly see the same 10 highlights of Caleb Williams, right? The same 10 home run plays that are amazing plays. But as someone that did dial into Caleb Williams, especially this year when it seemed like it was a real possibility he could become the Bears quarterback. And over the last 2 years, I mean, he was the Heisman Trophy winner, and anybody that watches college football has been following Caleb Williams. You can talk about his home run plays all you want, but it's all the other plays to me that makes what he is so impressive. And that's what you said, like, hey, I understand we got the home run plays, but let's talk. There's so much more, was what you said. And I've tried to task so many different film reviewers, film breakdown guys, to just do a 30-minute cut up of all his incompletions that are amazing throws that just simply didn't get brought down by their wide receiver for one reason or another, but could be charted as great throws that get lost in the history of time because they're not completed passes. They won't show up in a highlight reel. And you pointed that out. And that's kind of the thing. This dude, like you said, if Shane Waldron can get him to just take what the defense gives him, take the slant, take the quick out. And from what I've seen Caleb Williams, everybody just talks about the home run ball because the highlight reels, but he is capable of that stuff. And from what you've been breaking down, I feel like you feel the same way.
I do. I mean, the other part that's hard to talk about, because I think that there's a lot of people who go all the way back to Andrew Luck. Carm, you mentioned Andrew Luck. Andrew played with Jim Harbaugh in a Stanford offense that was literally built as if it was a professional offense. When Andrew needed to hit the flat, that was his job, as opposed to this Lincoln Riley air raid, 2 to 3 seconds. It's kind of similar to Waldron in the same idea of, hey, if the play breaks down, just go do whatever you want. But think of it more like a high school basketball offense, right? Where the offense is a guideline. At the end of the day, the ball is in the hands of its best player, and the coach expects that best player to go make a play. And that's a different game than the NFL, where if you don't hit the flat and you are trying to make a play, you're trying to do it with guys chasing you that are a step and a half faster than they used to be in school, right? And everybody has to adjust to that. But there's also a lot more incentive to play the NFL game when Caleb translates, because instead of hitting, gosh, what was the kid's name? Zachariah Branch, the freshman. Exciting kid out of USC, but a freshman. Instead, Carm, you're throwing to DJ Moore. Like, you're throwing to Keenan Allen, Greg. There's so many more threats you have underneath that are able to create the plays that we saw Justin Fields get against Washington. Justin Fields threw for, what was it? I mean, he obviously DJ caught for 230 yards, but I'm pretty sure at least 100 of those were on button hook curls that DJ just broke a tackle and went and made a bunch of yardage after the catch. That's the NFL. And so for me, Greg, there's a lot of those where Caleb's not going to get any attention for seeing a blitz and lofting a ball over to a tight end who jumps up the seam, right? Or an RPO where Caleb reads the RPO and ear holes the linebacker that's charging the run fit. Because if you're going to cut together a 6-minute reel of Caleb, you have way too many of these moments where he breaks out of the pocket, what his hips go full lateral as he's leaping in the air and throwing down the sidelines. Everybody thinks it's boring. But I think that what really sold me on Caleb was his play as a pocket passer. Everything else is icing. His ability to play schematic football and his release and his quickness, the way he moves around and avoids as more pressure than I think he creates, that really impresses me. And that's what I imagine the Bears are going to be trying to mine a little more out of as they get a pro version of Caleb Williams.
What's your guess at 9, Robert? What do you think happens?
So, Carm, I don't know. You tell me. Is one of the receivers getting there?
Is one of the receivers getting there? I don't know. I go back and forth on it, honestly. But like,
so do I.
Right. So, like, I mean, okay. If let's do the scenario. Let's just do the scenarios this way. Neighbors is there. Adunze is there. That's not happening. I'm just giving you all the options.
Mm-hmm.
Neighbors there, Adunze's there, Dallas Turner's there, Joe Alt's there. Who are they taking?
Neighbors there, I think they take him. Adunze's there. I don't know because part of me thinks that Poles might use Adunze as the bait on the end of the fish hook to try to trade back a little bit. If neither of the receivers are there, it wouldn't surprise me. Look, Josh Lucas mentioned this on the latest Hogan Johns, so I don't want to take all the credit for this, but have you guys watched Texas's Byron Murphy? The defensive tackle,
yep.
Like he is ridiculously fast. He's unbelievably quick. And I struggle to imagine Matt Eberflus, who, you know, this is a guy who like he's got 3 techniques on his pajamas, right? Like he's got pictures of 3 tech defensive tackles up on poster boards inside of his house. That guy's going to have Byron Murphy's going to have his attention. And so I'm not telling you, I think he'll be the pick at 9, but if the Bears do look to trade back or they want to add a sick defender, he might get you a better shot at that than somebody like Jared Verse, who's strong, really good against the run, but he doesn't have the pass rush juice that somebody like Murphy does. Johnny Newton is an Illinois favorite. I can't mention Murphy without mentioning that Johnny Newton is awesome. The concern with him is that he's got a Jones fracture in his foot, that Mason West, who is he's a physician that does a bunch of work over at Windy City Gridiron. He told me that those foot injuries can take a step out of your game. And so if the Bears look at somebody like Newton, who I believe needs surgery eventually, and forgive me if I'm off on that, I just know he's got this fracture, that if he does lose a step or he does have any medical concerns, that could push him out of where the Bears are looking. But that's not to take anything away from Illinois' own. He was awesome this year. He's just hurt, and Byron's not.
So did I hear that right? If they go defense, your number one pick is Murphy for the Bears?
I think so. At this point, like, let's be real here. The edges in this class, they're awesome. They're great. They would all be good Bears. There's no bad option when it comes to that number 9 pick. We have been through so many drafts, guys, where if we don't save the Bears with pick number 39, it's going to be an awful season. And we didn't, and it was an awful season. That's not to take anything away from Kyler Gordon. Right. In this case, if Rome Odunze is the pick, the Bears get a lot better. If Jared Verse, Laiatu Latu, that would shock me, by the way. I just would be blown away if Ryan Poles is down to draft a guy with a fused vertebra in his neck. We can get to that one later. If it's Turner, then maybe he grows into being a really special edge defender. If it's Verse, you know exactly what you're getting, and the edges of that defense are rock solid. But the flavorful pick to me is Murphy, because I think if Murphy hits his ceiling, I think he is the best pass rusher in the class. Run defender, he's really short. He's going to be able to take over one gap, pretty much one gap only, Carm. But there were 2 scenarios where the Bears were bad last year, and we all know it, right? They were bad when they were passing to try to take the lead back. If they were trailing and they had to throw the ball, they did not generally succeed. But also, when they were pass rushing to keep a lead, they were just as bad. And to me, Murphy is the most dangerous man in this draft when it comes to a 2nd down and 6 with 50 seconds on the clock, and we need pressure or they're going to hit a 10-yard chunk that's going to get him a little closer to field goal range. Does that make sense?
It does, and I guess look, I mean, we're all guessing here, obviously, but I don't know if you saw Montez Sweat on Chris Long's podcast, and you're shaking your head that you did. I mean, I believed everything was coming out of his mouth. Maybe I'm an idiot, but I mean,
you can believe everything coming out of his mouth, but you are an idiot.
Thank you, Greg. I appreciate it. But I mean, he's expecting a pretty large leap, I think, from Jervon Dexter Sr. coming up here in year two. So I, you know, watching that, I do wonder when it comes to them, you know, pecking order of who they need for that defense. Do they look at Big Dex as somebody who's going to be the dude that they thought that he was when they drafted him in the second round and knew that it probably would take a little bit of time for him to adjust to playing in the NFL and his get off and all those things. But maybe he did come on late in the season. I wonder how much the Bears think what they really think they have in Dexter.
I do too. And I mean, it's also worth remembering that two things. First of all, defensive tackle is a rotational position. You can have two of them and sure, they will play a lot of minutes, but also, so far, what we've seen from Dexter is that they're willing to play him anywhere, man. They'll play him at one tech. So Andrew Billings' spot, because he comes off the field for third downs. They played him at end, and he actually beat Penei Sewell on the end for, I believe it was a sack, but it was at the very least a really sweet pressure. And I'm right there with you, Carm. We don't ever know what the progress report on these guys is. We get the workout videos on social media, right? Where everybody looks like a superhuman. So if they're looking at Dexter and they think this guy's it, he's going to be our starter, that may push them off of somebody like Murphy and more towards somebody like, I bet you they like Verse and I bet you they like Turner, right?
Well, yeah, and just to argue against myself right now, I'm sorry to cut you off, but I just want to throw out there that the Bears were a 7-win team last year. And yes, you know, whatever, added Keenan, added Everett, roster looks a whole lot better. Tez is here for a whole season. They still should be drafting the best player available. It's not like they should do what I just said. Who is the best player on the board, period, and you can figure out how to use them. That's how I would go about it.
The only concern that I have when it comes to this team's makeup right now is if Montez Sweat gets hurt, which obviously you hope not, right? If you took the best player off of any defense, most of them would get worse. Everybody knows this. But the Bears are one major defensive line injury away from their defensive line taking a pretty hefty step back. And it wouldn't surprise me if the Bears know that, which I think is kind of a bummer to talk about. I wish, Carm, like you're talking about, that the entire oyster was open so that if Roma Dunze or Malik Nabers, or maybe they just like Brock Bowers, Brian Thomas Jr., A.D. Mitchell, any of these names, that they were more interested in them. But if I had to guess right now, I bet you they are thinking we need a second pass rush threat and we're going to do what we can to attach our name to one of these second round receivers. It's totally just a shot that I have, but I'm thinking offensive line coach, former linebackers coach, deep wide receiver class. And have you guys noticed, like, okay, so I'll give you an anecdote. Stephon Diggs, former fifth rounder, Justin Jefferson, back half of the first round. Let me see. Tyreek Hill, well after round one.
Devontae Adams was a second rounder.
DK Metcalf, second rounder. AJ Brown, I think. I can't remember, so I'm not going to guess. But as much as we love receiver, it's not so long ago that Sammy Watkins was the slam dunk receiver that you had to take, and guys like Odell Beckham Jr. were drafted after him. Right. So the rearview mirror on receivers is always very different than the way we feel about the receivers going into the draft, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, my concern is what Gary's saying, and he's taking the words right out of my mouth, but I agree with Gary here. Poles hasn't done well with late round wide receivers. And yes, this is a deep wide receiver draft. The Packers here the last couple of years have done a good job of adding late round wide receiver talent. And now look at their room, young wide receivers that they didn't, you know, get in the first round. So be it. But at the same time, you look at Ryan Poles' resume so far, trading for Chase Claypool, drafting Velus Jones, drafting Tyler Scott. When you have a guy like Puka Nacua who was sitting there, you know what I mean? Like, so I'm nervous about not taking what I feel like is more of a sure thing with one of those top three wide receivers, because at the end of the day, we can talk about all the different needs they have left on this roster, but making sure you get this quarterback right and make sure you're putting him in the best position to succeed is paramount. So I think it's a twofold decision in that regard. and why I might have to pass on a D tackle or to take in the first defensive player off the board, because I want to make sure that I'm setting up Caleb Williams to succeed right out the gate. You have a first round pick next year and 2 second round picks next year. So I think the other layer of this discussion, potentially, I don't know how far, you know, a guy like Ryan Poles looks into it, or if he only focuses on the now, but is what does the receiver room or the edge room or the offensive line room look next year, or class, I should say, look next year based off of what you can decide for at nine this year? I mean, do you think that they play 3D chess like that and look ahead to what they potentially could have next year, and that could help base their decision on what they need to get now? Or do you think they only can focus on the now?
I definitely think they do. And moreover, I think we've got evidence Ryan Poles is already doing that to at least some degree, right? I mean, last year, instead of panic picking Bryce Young or potentially picking CJ Stroud, he obviously looked ahead and said, this 2024 quarterback class excites me a lot more. We'll trade. Forgive me.
Don't die on us.
Don't worry. I've been doing it for 2 months. You can take all the time, drink all the water. I'm so happy you're coughing. It makes me feel, you have no idea how good it makes me feel.
It's amazing, right? He said, Ryan Poles clearly looked at this, Greg, I think, and said, okay, we got multiple quarterbacks that are to be liked in 2024. 2023 is the year to build through the draft, add talent as much as we can. And whatever happens next year, we're either building around Justin or we're taking a new quarterback. Obviously, they look into number one. We've had this discussion forever, right? But moreover, the Bears haven't traded a single 2025 pick yet, which is pretty unusual for Chicago. I mean, after all those years of Ryan Pace, I got really accustomed to getting about half of a draft class, didn't you? And yeah. Even as Ryan Poles is sending pick after pick after pick in this offseason, he hasn't sent any of the future ones. I bet you that he could have gotten Ryan Bates for a 2025 pick of some kind, but he intentionally sent a pick in this draft, as with Keenan Allen, a pick in this draft. And it seems to me as if Ryan Poles is trying to keep 2025 relatively sacred. We may see him use one of those future twos to trade into the second round if he can't trade down. I won't be surprised if that's where the Bears go. But it sure feels to me, Greg, I mean, have you noticed the Bears have a ton of cap space coming available in 2025? They've got a full draft suite. It looks to me like 2024 is supposed to be the Bears 1.0 under Ryan Poles. And then in the 2025 offseason, they say, okay, so what worked and what didn't? And let's fix what didn't work and build on what did. Like, yep. This next season seems to be the identity setter, which is really exciting if the biggest stakes we've had in Chicago in a while. Now, one other thing you mentioned, because I do want to tie to this. I talked about Montez Sweat's injury. You could make the same argument for Keenan Allen, couldn't you? Like, I love Keenan Allen. We all love Keenan Allen. Keenan Allen gets hurt pretty often. I mean, he's struggled with soft tissue injuries for a little while now, not to mention he's going on 32. If you lose Keenan Allen in week 7, Greg, are you throwing Caleb Williams out there with DJ Moore and Tyler Scott as your wide receiver too? No way. So obviously something's coming at wide receiver. It's just a matter of, well, how big is the gun? Right.
Is it 9 or is it 75? I agree. And to your point about next year's draft and the salary cap, Eric Bochanton saying Bears have 9 picks next year's draft. And, you know, a 6th round pick in Justin Fields that can turn into a 4th round pick. They could also add an additional 3rd round pick if Ian Cunningham were to get a general manager job.
Oh my gosh.
And then if Keenan Allen were to leave, you get a compensatory pick for him as well, potentially. So those are different options. Although I think Hoag's correct me, because I keep saying this and it's not correct. We would get the Keenan Allen compensatory pick would be the next year, not it would be 2 years from now, not next year's draft. Regardless, you're at stockpiling more picks than what you already have. And so, you know, it'll be interesting to see how this unfolds. Now, speaking of giving up draft capital for next year and haven't done so yet, do you buy this idea that the Bears could potentially give up draft capital for next year to move up and take Marvin Harrison Jr.? I have been dreaming of Marvin Harrison Jr. for 3 years in the universe that Justin Fields was going to be our franchise quarterback and we were just going to walk off into the sunset with one of the greatest wide receiver prospects that I've ever seen. And, you know, obviously has the lineage with, you know, his dad being a Hall of Famer. The idea, I mean, I would love if they trade up for Marvin Harrison Jr. I'm not going to be upset. I'm going to be so happy about it. But I personally would not sign off. If you were to ask me right now, would I trade up to get Marvin Harrison Jr.? I would say no. I would let the draft fall to me. But do you buy the potential that Ryan Poles will trade up for Marvin Harrison Jr. if he were to fall to five?
Okay, so if you asked me in March, I would have indignantly told you, no, they're not trading up. Come on, what are we doing? And I don't know about you guys, right now there's a lot of buzz about the Bears potentially moving up. Does that mean they're going to? My gut still says no, Greg. I mean, this is the season. This week right here, when everybody talks about trading a future one for that guy, right? Because whatever the guy is, for maybe Atlanta, they're thinking about like, oh, we got to trade up so that we can get Joe Alt. I don't know. Atlanta's a bad example, right? This is the time of season when Buffalo fans talk about trading up everything so that they can go get a wide receiver. Would that really help them the most? Well, right now the fans sure think it would, right? If the Bears do trade up, I'm not going to spit in the eye of it. Come on. Will it be worth it? Bro, I don't know. But they're going to get Marvin Harrison or Malik Nabers. I think these guys are amazing. I mean, Dane Brugler said it best when he said, Malik Nabers would be my number one overall player in the 2022 and 2023 draft classes. And in this class, he happens stagially is the third best player behind Marvin Harrison and Caleb Williams. So if the Bears came away, Greg, with Dane Brugler's like number one and number three player, I am going to more than live with it. Let's go, baby.
Yeah.
I do think a trade down's more likely, or sticking and picking at nine. But all that's going to depend on what happens with this draft board. What happens if four quarterbacks don't go? What happens if three tackles get drafted? What happens if two of the receivers fall? This thing could go any which way. You know what I mean?
You're muted.
Whoopsie. What do you think the Commanders are doing it to?
I am talking to too many smart people that all agree that Drake May is the second best quarterback in the class. I mean, whether you're talking about Derek Klassen, who does quarterback charting over at Bleacher Report, whether you're talking about Nate Tice over at The Athletic, whether you're talking about Dane Brugler over at The Athletic, or Steven Ruiz, who is over at The Ringer, everybody seems to be in line, if you're not on a four-letter network, that Drake May is the second best quarterback in the class. But oh my gosh, guys, all of the noise is Daniels. Like, I am confused. If you guys are too, because this feels obvious and the media is making it sound like it's obvious in the other direction. But right now it sure feels to, if I had to put my betting chips on something, I'm still going to bet that it's Drake May at two, and that everything else is a matter of trying to get a football inexperienced new owner in Washington to make a mistake. But I would also buy it if the Washington Commanders think that they need to pick a Heisman winning quarterback to supercharge their fan base and give them something to cheer for, even if they think that he would be, or even if they might think that May could end up being the next Justin Herbert. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, I was talking with Shane Marsaw earlier today, and he brought up a stat to me that, I mean, I think also shows on tape or shows if you watched LSU play last year, but Jaden Daniels, he told me, only threw it 16 times in when he scrambled. Of all the times he scrambled out of the pocket and ran the football, he only threw it downfield 16 times once he got out of the pocket. Like, that's concerning. I mean, that's something we dealt with here in Chicago with Justin Fields, trying to get him comfortable with keeping your eyes downfield. And when you reverse it back to Caleb Williams, that is what he's so great at. You know, he fights to keep his eyes downfield. He fights to not only do that, but fights to stay in the pocket. His maneuverability within the pocket is unbelievable. But even when he gets out of it, he's trying to throw the ball before he runs it. But a guy like Jaden Daniels, he's trying to run it. And too many times I've seen him run right into a guy that, you know, lays him out, you know, a few times. Right. And when you look at those hits and the idea of him taking those in the NFL, and you look back at what happened to Anthony Richardson last year, I don't have very much confidence that he can make it through a 17 game season with that style of play and that frame that he plays with. So I would be drafting Drake May at two. I think he's got unbelievable arm talent. You know, he's a much bigger dude that can take those kind of hits. Does he bail out of the pocket as well? Yeah, there's more than a few times that Drake May bailed out of the pocket when he didn't need to. You're also playing with guys on Duke, you know, or, you know, on UNC, I should
say.
Same
difference.
So
don't tell them that. They'd get
right, yeah, exactly. But the Duke game was one of my more favorite games to watch. Drake May balled out in that game. But, you know, the talent around him at UNC isn't, you know, you're not playing at Ohio State, so to speak. So
I got a number for you, Greg. Clean pocket scramble rate. So that is, how often did you scramble to run when your pocket was considered clean, right? Jaden Daniels, roughly 9.2%. Justin Fields, back at Ohio State, roughly 8.3%. Drake May, roughly 7.1%. So you can see that all three of these guys, they'll tuck the ball and run it, just like you were saying, Greg.
What was Caleb Williams?
3.5%.
Wow.
So you chop that thing down. Caleb wants to throw the ball.
What was CJ?
He says that at his pro day. He means it.
Do you know what CJ's was?
I didn't have CJ's. I can go look it up. I think it's actually right near Caleb's. I'm doing this one off memory because I talk about this stat a lot. But during y'all's next point, I'll look it up.
Well, it's a great point, and the only reason why I'm bringing up CJ is because CJ took half the amount of sacks that Justin took at Ohio State, and I'm not here to rehash that conversation for the zillionth time, but I do wonder, did we already mess this thing up because CJ is looking like the guy's going to be incredible? But considering everything, the way it turned out, you can't fault the Bears at all for not taking him last year, sitting here with everything they got, plus Caleb coming.
Yep. I want to ask you about another quarterback here in a second, but before we do, I want to give a shout out to our sponsors. And also, anybody in the chat, I've already highlighted a few questions from some people that have some questions for Robert. If you have any questions, fire away to those into the comments. I'll highlight them and we'll try to answer those here on the back end of our show. But want to give a shout out to Circa Sports here in Illinois. They're doing such a great job coming to Waukegan. You got to hit up the Circa Sportsbook in Waukegan. It's great. We were over there for the beginning of the March Madness tournament. Really nice spot to go hang. They got the sports book. You got the whole casino there, a few restaurants. It's a really nice spot in Waukegan. If you haven't checked it out, you should. The Circa Sportsbook has tight money line splits. Games strive to be a minus 110 split on the Circa Sports menu, unlike other sports books, which may use a minus 115 or a minus 120 split. Circa Sports keeps as little money as possible on large market bets, especially compared to other books. Extremely transparent, Circa Sports does not limit players based on their winnings. Every player has the same limits, unlike other books who do limit winning players. I encourage all bettors to download and explore all sports betting apps available. Go see for yourself. Compare every line from each sportsbook. Nobody does it better than Circa Sportsbook. Circa's customer service is second to none. Real people behind the Circa Sports brand who resolve issues in a timely fashion, unlike other books who use chatbots. All aspects of the app are being run by the same team that runs the main Circa Sportsbook at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, where they got that world-famous stadium swim where you can go outside and watch games and hang out by the pool and have a great time. So download the Circa Sports Illinois app at circasports.com/Illinois-app to sign up today. Also, be on the lookout for Circa events, watch parties, and tailgates. If you or someone you may know has a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or text GAMB to 833-234 or visit areyoureallywinning.com. And one of those events that Circa Sports is going to be having here is in 14 days. We're going to be at Joe's on Weed Street, presented by Circa Sports and Casa Azul. That first night, Thursday night, the night we're all talking about, you know, Caleb Williams and what they're going to do at 9, completely sold out at Joe's on Weed Street. But don't worry, Friday,
awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be a party. But don't worry, because Friday night we're running it back. Make sure you come out to Joe's on Weed Street. Tickets still available if you go to allchgo.com/events. And on Friday night, have a chance to meet Super Bowl champ, Monster of the Midway, the Hitmen, half of the Hitmen with Doug Plank, Gary Fensick will be there on hand, have a chance to get an autograph and a picture with Gary. Collector's Cave bringing out Gary. Really excited to hang out with him. So once again, if you become a diehard, you can get a discount on that event. Free shirt out the gate. Get all the amenities that come with becoming a diehard, including our Bears 100 draft guide, Adam Hoge's newsletter, discounts on merchandise going forward, and discounts on events like our draft party coming up. And then, of course, we are going to London in the regular season. So if you become a diehard, you have an opportunity to get some discounts there as well. Okay, so we have a few different, like I said, we have some different questions coming in, but the one quarterback we didn't talk about that, to me, I think controls this draft is JJ McCarthy. So I'm assuming you've been breaking down all these quarterbacks, even though we're dialed into Caleb Williams here in Chicago. But I'm still trying to understand this top five fascination with JJ McCarthy. I'm not trying to say, like, when we get into this discussion, it sounds like I have to hate on JJ McCarthy to get my point across of why I don't think he's worthy of a top five pick. But at the same time, if the Vikings are feeling this strongly about this guy, who to me is just, I think best case scenario, another Kirk Cousins. If you're trying to trade two or three first round picks to move up to four or even three to get him, are you seeing this on tape? What am I missing that the rest of the league is trying to tell me that JJ McCarthy is top five pick worthy?
Well, so first things first, it's worth remembering that we have to start with the situation. Why does Minnesota want to trade up like they do, Greg? It's because their time is running out. Like, Kwesi Adolfo-Mensah and Kevin O'Connell have achieved a lot in Minnesota, but right now the arrow is pointing down, meaning you need a quarterback because the quarterback buys you time. This is a tried and true method that we've unfortunately seen a lot of in Chicago, right? Where you draft the quarterback, you get Mitch Trubisky, and hopefully everybody keeps their job. Now, it hasn't worked twice in Chicago, but that doesn't stop people from trying. But let's talk about JJ specifically. You remember how we talked about how the college game and the NFL game couldn't be more different? You watch Caleb Williams, you see what he's doing in an air raid. Again, high school LeBron James, but I'm going to make a very loose comparison. I'm not trying to call Caleb LeBron. Hope everybody understands that. High school LeBron James running an offense where at the end of the day, just go do it for me, Caleb. JJ or Jaden Daniels, electric runner, calls his own number way more often than anybody should at the NFL level. So it doesn't feel the same as NFL football. Very option route heavy. If you wanted to get deep into it, looks a lot more like Ohio State. Get to Drake May. More air raid, Greg. Same similar idea as Caleb Williams, just it's UNC's take on it. I think that's Mack Brown, as opposed to Lincoln Riley. So different ideas, but that same major reliance on pre-snap reads and quick hitters. And outside of that, just go make a play for me. Jaden Daniel or JJ McCarthy is the player here with the most NFL direct translatable reps on anybody's film. And it's those throws over the middle. Man, I bet you NFL player or NFL evaluators love, Greg, seeing the start under center, big fake handoff, drop back 7 yards in the pocket, hit your landmark, whistle the ball between a linebacker and a safety right over the middle. It doesn't matter if it's against Bowling Green. There are a couple of these throws in particular in the 20 yards between the hashes, where JJ laced a really hot fastball that I know got me excited when I was watching through it because I didn't know where the Bears were going to land. And I was like, oh my gosh. Then he throws outside the numbers. Then the mechanics fall apart a little bit. And you say, he's 20. He could totally grow into this. But I'm with you, Greg, that he looks much more like a project than the rest of them, where I think Drake May and Caleb look a little bit more like the whole package. Jaden Daniels, whatever you think of him, he looks like he is much further along in his development because he is, right? I think JJ has a lot of talent. I also think he's pretty slight of frame. I think he's really athletic, but he's got a long way to go. And I'm with you, Greg, in that, aren't you glad that we're not having to talk ourselves into QB4 in a situation like this, yep, as opposed to just getting whoever we like the best?
I'd probably take JJ McCarthy over Jaden Daniels. I see a risk in both of them. Mm-hmm. But with me, I think JJ McCarthy, what worries me is his accuracy. And you say the down, the over the middle stuff, he's a tough as nails guy. Like, he's going to stand in the pocket, he's going to take his licks, and he's going to get back up, and all those cliches. But when I see him press to make a play down the field, the accuracy isn't always there. Then the other aspect of it for me is, you know, not through any fault of his own, but they don't ask him to throw many times in a game. So to draft someone that high, when you get to the NFL, at some point you got to start winning games with your arm. You're not, especially when you're a top quarterback taken. This is why Caleb Williams coming into such a unique situation where he won't have to do everything himself to develop. You know, JJ McCarthy likely isn't going into that same situation. Now, if he goes to Minnesota, Minnesota does trade up. You've got Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison. That's a good start, you know, but at the same time, you know, I am concerned about his ability to eventually prove that he can make all the throws, and not just make all the throws, but have to make a, you know, the quantity of throws within a game to win a game. I think, can he win a game on a fourth quarter drive at the end if his team puts him in position? Yeah, I think he's got that kind of moxie. But can he be the reason you win the game? Can he be the reason that you get to the fourth quarter with a two-touchdown lead? I don't know if he's answered that question yet, and I don't know if I'd be comfortable drafting him in the top five, and I certainly don't know if I'd be comfortable trading up to draft him within the top five as the fourth quarterback taken.
It's so funny because you go back and you look at four. I'm going to take you guys down a memory lane that chances are you guys were not at. But gosh, 6 years ago when the Bears were looking at drafting Mitch Trubisky, I remember the entire 2017 or 2016 season as the Bears just lost and lost and lost and lost and lost and put themselves into the point where they ended up getting third overall. I was doing look ahead scouting, and y'all, at the time, Mitch Trubisky was considered a second rounder, where people said, hey, you want some value? Take this kid from UNC. You don't need to draft Deshaun Watson. Like, draft this kid. He'll be just as good. By the time the draft rolled around, Greg, you had to take, or Ryan Pace felt as if he needed to trade up to number two to go get Mitch Trubisky, because that late round guy that's all intangibles, he gets inflated to a very early pick, where it becomes less about, is he worth the number five overall pick, and more about, do I trust other teams not to take him before me? Because the cost of not having a quarterback, dude, imagine selling to your fan base, to your owner, a season of Sam Darnold. Like, you have to pick somebody, and you'd hope that you'd pick somebody that, where it would work, but are you really going to go with Michael Penix or Bo Nix at this point in your career, when you know if you get a quarterback even kind of right? I mean, even if Justin Jefferson does all the work for you and JJ McCarthy looks playable, you're getting extended. And as much as we like to make it about other things, that matters to every GM and every coach that's in all of these buildings. And it's one of the nice things, I think, about, if can we give the man some flowers? George McCaskey has not been an amazing owner over the last bunch of years, but he did give Ryan Poles the wherewithal to do a full teardown. So right now, what's best for Ryan Poles is also what's best for the Bears. There were years where what's best for Ryan Pace was not what was best for the Bears, in my opinion. Ryan Pace needed to take assets from the future. He needed to invest them in his team so that we can win some games now, so that I can keep my job. And you ended up creating a team that needed to have some of the rotten parts of it torn out. That's where the Vikings feel to me like they're headed. Not that I'm trying to doom cast on our rivals. Whereas the Bears, I really feel like guys are being built as holistically as I've seen them built in my entire life. Greg, can you think of a time where you felt like the team was flowering at the same moment, the way this one seems to be?
No, that's what's got us all excited. I mean, it's a unique situation. There's no question about it. Carm, we got a guy in the chat, Lunatic. He's asking, would you take Secret Agent Man over JJ McCarthy?
You know, that's, that's an interesting question. Listen, I'll tell you this, Lunatic. I believe everything that Tyson Bajan is doing this offseason. I believe that if
he looks yoked, man.
He's on fields and forests and flowing in bubbling springs and getting chilled out. organically. Listen, if Caleb Williams for some reason can't make it for a couple of games this year and Bajent goes out there, I'm expecting him to be successful. For me, the McCarthy thing, this is a classic overdraft of the intangible, do right, comfortable,
yes,
looks like me, lack of a better word, white quarterback. That's what's going on here for me with JJ.
It's a second round pick that becomes a first round pick that becomes a high pick, right? Right, Carm?
Yeah.
Something we see every year.
Yeah, and if I'm the Vikings, look here's it's a little bit of Carm advice for the world. If you're you know, working for somebody and you're planning on going to work for somebody else, or you think you're going to get fired, well, you still have integrity to serve your employer. So Minnesota, if it's me, I do want to keep my job, but I also want to set up a guy who gave me an opportunity to be in the best shape possible. So the Vikings trading up three first round picks to try to save a GM's job, that ain't serving your employer at all. That's putting yourself first, which is just not that's selfish, and it's a bad job. If I'm the Vikings, listen, I will stick with Michael Penix or JJ at 11. Who's take? If are you sure the Giants are going to take him? Okay, all right, fine. I'll take I'll take Penix, who can sling it better than JJ. I've got injury concerns, and yes, his play's up and down, but I wouldn't do it. And I'm also, by the way, I got to win down the line too. I need those draft picks. So it seems like a very desperate move. A desperate move is just they don't end well. You end up, you end up where Ryan Pace ends up. So I don't like it at all. But hey, maybe I'll be wrong. I mean, I have no crystal ball on what JJ McCarthy's going to do, obviously.
Well, I mean, it's funny, Carm, because there are two teams with very similar destinies right now in the New York Giants and the Minnesota Vikings, right? Both of them has succeeded so early in their new coach's tenure that it's as if their fan base and their organization isn't ready for when things got worse, because the Giants won a playoff game and beat the Vikings, who went 13-4 that season with that insane comeback. But I really find it interesting, because not to be all boring and make it all about how great the Bears are, but when you struggle early, everybody's okay with it, or at least more okay with it. Right. When you win early, you set a tone that you're going to continue to win. And sometimes the ball just bounces your way a couple of times. And well, I'm with you that to me, this looks like the 2018 Bears, at least a little, don't you think? Where if this quarterback doesn't come in and save them, then what was the trade up for? Especially if it costs a future one, like if it takes them two first round picks, they don't have a second round pick. And if it does cost a future first round pick to then go get a guy who now your defense doesn't really have much on it besides Rashawn Greenard, which I'm not trying to take away from him, right? Brian Flores did a lot with a little last year, but a lot with a little doesn't win you playoff games eventually, right? I mean, the division, can we talk about how the North is looking very difficult all of a sudden? Like, if you've got a good Bears team, well, the Lions and the Packers both just went pretty deep with cores that should be there for a little while. Like, there could be some great clashes in this division, and Carm, the Vikings may fall behind, and that could happen fast.
Well, right now they're the fourth team in the division at this very moment, I think. So,
all right, so we got a few comments here in the chat, a few super chats we want to roll through. Garrett Hanna, $4.99 super chat. Having a Miller Lite and watching CHGO, life doesn't get much better. Bear down. Appreciate you, Garrett. And Scottish Bear, pound sterlings. Braggs, Robert, Carm, would you trade up for Joe Alt?
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I would not.
Would you there, Robert?
I wouldn't trade up for him. I would probably
if he's there at 9 and it's him, Adunze, Dallas Turner or your guy Murphy, who you taking?
The problem is that you dangle me a Dunze in this case. So it's like, I like a Dunze. The problem here is that I do think that Braxton Jones is imperfect. To say that he's perfect is ridiculous, right? But serviceable at left tackle, especially when you're serviceable and pretty affordable, creates all kinds of value that you can spend somewhere else. Bears fans, because Braxton Jones is affordable, they could spend on Montez Sweat without blinking an eye. They had all the room in the world. The moment you take Joe Alt, now he needs to be not only good, which ask the Giants how they feel about Evan Neal, right? Not every one of these top flight tackle picks is automatically going to be good. Ike Ekwonu, the left tackle currently for Carolina, is also struggling. And he was, I think it was Evan Neal and Ekwonu who were, as memory serves, OT one and two, and they flipped back and forth depending on who you ask. These guys aren't guarantees. And so God forbid you draft Alt and he doesn't hit the ground running. Did you make the line worse in 2024? Like, maybe I'm nuts, but I look at left tackle as something that could be upgraded in 2025, where it's like, Braxton, I know who you are, and that actually means a lot to me right now. So do what you do for or until Caleb is a little better.
And it's almost like the field situation. It's almost like the field situation because he's coming up to his potential contract. So you have a year to prove your worth spending franchise left tackle money on. And if not, I'm going to use my first round pick to replace you.
Like, exactly.
I think that potentially could be the road they take.
Texas 2024, Fields 2023. I think that's a great comparison.
Yep. So a few more. Cassie was asking, because we were talking about Caleb Williams earlier, and she said, I keep hearing pocket passer, but does that translate? I honestly don't know. Help.
Huh. It's so funny, right? So first of all, yes. Most of the time when people throw from the pocket, they continue to throw from the pocket is at least what we've seen. A friend of mine, he's Stark Kyle Orton on Twitter. He did a bunch of analytical work. And what he realized, guys, was that charting deep passing percentage, like the completion percentage deep, isn't near as helpful as charting how often did the quarterback try to do it at a collegiate level. Because unsurprisingly, Carm, if Drake May is throwing to Taj Washington, Greg, and Taj doesn't track the ball well, but Jaden Daniels throws to Malik Nabers and Malik gets under everything, then Daniels' completion percentage looks amazing. Drake's falls. So results can be kind of a liar when it comes to collegiate football. But what we've seen with Stroud is right now the current poster boy for it, is what you tried to do in college, you will try to do again. If you never tried to throw the football while scrambling, you probably won't in the NFL. That is your game, right? If you did try to throw the ball while scrambling, you will continue to do so. It's why you have these spooky moments where you can pull up a clip from Josh Allen playing at Washington or Wyoming, and he looks like that in a Bills uniform. If you go watch Patrick Mahomes, you'll say at Texas Tech, you'll say he does that. He does that in the NFL. And so there's a piece of this with Caleb that I'm sure he's going to have to refine. I assume you're talking about Caleb. But there's also a piece of this where we see all the bones for somebody that should work in the NFL. The only problem is, I don't know if it's a problem. I think everybody's got the comp wrong. Mahomes is amazing at not taking sacks. I think Caleb Williams is much more similar to his idol, Aaron Rodgers, who nobody remembers this, but Aaron Rodgers takes, he has about a 20% pressure to sack rate, which for those of you who don't know anything about pressure to sack rate, it is what it sounds like. How often were you pressured? How often did you get sacked? 20% is considered pretty high. But that's because, guys, nobody remembers all the sacks Rodgers took on 3rd and 11 when taking sack didn't matter, right? Like, you forget that that's a sack because it just seems like a third down stop. Caleb is very similar. We're on his, he has an 18.6% pressure to sack rate over the last two seasons. But on first and second down, it's 16.1%. On third down, it's 24.7. Caleb clearly knows when to take a sack, when to push the ball, when not to. And I think that attitude all circles up into what
we're talking
about.
Well, and to your point, the other number that has been thrown around the last few days, and I've seen it on Twitter, and then it was in Dane Brugler's Beast guide, was that to line up with what you're saying here, that Caleb Williams hasn't thrown an interception on third or fourth down in 199 pass attempts.
Pretty nutty, right?
So he's taking the sacks. You know, maybe he's had a few fumbles on those, but he's not letting the ball out of his hand if it's not there. Now, Carm made a good point, I thought, the other day. It was like, I almost kind of want him to a little bit, maybe not too much, but enough to take a few chances. But I guess the argument would be, you know, the team had such a slim margin to win, you know, and when you have to put up 40 plus points last year to win games at USC, turnovers would be the difference in you winning or not winning, you know, when you've got to drop 40 plus there. So let's get through a few more of these comments here. Appreciate everybody tuning in here tonight to CHGO Bears After Dark. Please hit that like button while you're hanging out. Appreciate Robert, you coming on and giving us your knowledge. Always enjoy your passion for this game, and your energy is contagious, my friend. Eric Alley saying Dex to defensive end idea.
Okay, so this is an idea I've pitched on stream a couple times, where basically right now, Gravon Dexter, where he struggled last year was against defending the run, specifically when he was getting double teamed, right? When the center and the guard would charge him. A lot of times Dexter got peeled out of the run lane pretty quickly. He was a really good pass rusher though. And so the idea that I had, and it's me being tinfoil hatty, I understand this is crazy, is we saw Dex win from defensive end as a pass rusher. I wonder if he could be a part-time defensive end if you did draft a Byron Murphy. Now, am I shoehorning Byron a little bit? Maybe, right? This may be working too hard to get Byron Murphy involved. But also, guys, if the NFL is cyclical, then what we are having right now is we're seeing defensive ends are getting lighter. That's why guys like Dallas Turner are 245 pounds at the combine. And so that means that you're getting a lot more Braxton Joneses around the NFL, long tackles that are light, right? Because they need to be able to keep up with speed around the end. It's why did Gravon Dexter beat Penei Sewell? Because a 290-pound behemoth carries way too much mass for a lot of these tackles' anchors. And it just has me wondering, could you get edge two play out of a guy as athletic as Big Dex is if you got him down to like 285? Probably thinking too outside the box. If he's good at three tech, just play him there. But that's the idea Eric's wanting me to pitch.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Thinking, hey, got to think all the angles here. Okay. A couple more here as we're, eclipsing the 1 hour mark, the eclipse. Did you, Carm wasn't a believer in the eclipse. I was with you on this. I was down in Phoenix and, you know, I wasn't impressed by it either.
You didn't have totality. You lacked totality.
I don't think we saw it in totality. It did get kind of dark, but I did see some images from like Indianapolis where it got like pitch black for a little bit. So
it
I think pitch black
in Dallas was pretty sweet.
All right. So if I had experienced that, maybe I'd have hyped it up, but I was too lost in the Purdue Boilermaker sauce to have any time for any of those.
You should have been
on nonsense. What's your ideal draft haul for number nine?
Am I allowed to be all abstract and say you like a crazy sweet? A sweet defensive lineman and a sweet receiver. If you made me outline it, I love the wide receivers. I don't love the defensive linemen like I love the wide receivers. I would probably tell you that if I could get Byron Murphy and Ladd McConkie, those would be my two like ideal guys right now, the Georgia receiver. Because another thing I keep thinking about, Greg, so McConkie should be a first rounder. Like by tape and talent, I think he should be a first rounder, but he's a part-time player. Because of injuries, he's 185 pounds, and the NFL loves to take that guy and discount him around. Cooper Kupp was a third rounder not too long ago. Josh Downs spent the whole offseason as a second rounder, drafted in the third. Tyler Scott, whole offseason as a third rounder, drafted in the fourth. If McConkie makes it to the mid-second, I would snap that up. I think he's basically going, I don't think he's literally Jordan Addison, but I think he could do a lot of what he can do. And I have a lot more confidence in McConkie becoming a legitimate weapon than I do, I don't know, Darius Robinson, like playing edge. And even him, he's going to go to the draft. How low is he going to get drafted? That usually that guy, like Keon White last year, he gets drafted, what, high second after sitting in the green room? So it's not as if he may even make it to the mid second. I don't know. You get into trouble trying to shoot the moon. Because if you told me that all they ended up with was Caleb and Marvin Harrison, yeah, I'm happy with that too. Ideal is just a weird word.
Yeah. So finally, to wrap things up, to, you know, kind of attach this conversation as far as the wide receiver talk, Like, what wide receivers do you think will be on the board? I'm assuming Ricky Pearsall will not be one of those names. Right. So that's my question is, if you had to guess and name a couple guys, who do you think would be available at 75, and who would you want the Bears to draft at 75 in terms of a wide receiver?
So I think Legette is going to be there. And if not, I think he'll get picked 10 picks before. Maybe he won't. Maybe I'm crazy. But I can't help but think that you've got all of the flair of Velus Jones, in that he only has one season on record where he really performed. And everybody's looking at Jonathan Mingo, who just got overdrafted last year. That's who I see him very similar to. Do I want Legette? I don't love it. But we're talking third round receiver. I have to make some sacrifices. I think Malachi Corley will be there. I think, Javon Baker, I do think will get there. And he'd be an interesting add too. Everybody loves Javon Baker, I think a little more than I do, because I worry about whether the Big 12 corners were able to actually test him or not. But that's a separate discussion. Johnny Wilson would probably get there. He's kind of a Looney Tune. I mean, he is envision a 6'1 receiver and now make him 6'8. That's what Johnny Wilson looks like, including the lack of power when it comes to the way he plays the game. As far as my favorite of that group, my head says it's probably Corley, who's probably the best player. My heart says it's probably Baker is what I'd say. But if anything, Greg, I can't help but look at it and I'm like, 75 feels to me like just a little bit too late when it comes to where the Bears would be drafting a receiver. I would rather them trade up a little, and I hate trading up, so that they could get a slightly better receiver. Cause I think the fall off after you get out of Worthy and Coleman and Mitchell and Thomas Jr. and Pearsall, like Pearsall being the last one in, I think it gets a little tougher to find an impact receiver early.
Okay. Marcus Carmen, got anything left? Appreciate you.
Just want to shout out the work that Robert does. I mean, the level of detail that he has in the draft is second to none. I mean, this is you ask him for a pick 75 and he'll throw you 17 guys off the top of his head. It's not a lot of Robert Schmitz rolling around out there. So just props to you, Robert, and thank you for being on.
Sure.
Thank you. I look forward to your deep detailed the Bears fourth overall.
Draft. Bring you back on and I'll tell you. We'll be ready.
I was gonna tee Greg up for it. I didn't get his six guys that he's looking at whatever 100 and plus, but we'll save that for the next after.
I can tell you the six incoming freshmen for Purdue basketball right now, but Robert, I've said it before and I'll say it again. You do such a tremendous job. Always enjoy your energy and spirit for this team. Congrats again on becoming the editor in chief here this past year with the Bears blog. I've always enjoyed Jeff's coverage and he was very smart to bring you on. Jonathan Wood also does a great job over there with you guys as well. Congrats, keep up the great work. We got a fun off season ahead. And of course, thank you for coming on here tonight and, giving us your knowledge. And I know everybody here in the chat and everybody that's going to watch here later on appreciates it as well.
Anytime. So happy to be here.
Yes, sir. All right. Well, hit that like button on your way out for Robert. Make sure you follow Robert at Robert K. Schmitz on Twitter. Follow them at the Bears blog. They do a lot of great work. And we'll be back tomorrow afternoon. Adam Hogue has a special guest lineup that I won't spoil here tonight, but make sure you tune in at 12 p.m. Central. Until then, hit the subscribe button. We'll see you on the mean streets of Bears Twitter. And always, bear down. Y'all silly like the mayor.